You're listening to Mike and Kristen,
the podcast.
I'm Mike, a musician, writer, and producer.
And I'm Kristen, a painter, writer, and designer.
Our show is all about following dreams, taking chances, and what life as an artist is really about.
Together, we bring you weekly guest interviews and thought-provoking conversations.
Let's go! We're live! What is going on? How are you? We are here with another episode of Mike and Kristen, and we're back from the third and final podcast conference that we attended this year in Los Angeles, Evolutions by Podcast Moving, an amazing time. Kristen, let's jump into it.
What a wild month it's been, huh?
Oh my God.
Speak of March Madness.
Yeah, March Madness for us, and we actually got to attend a March Madness basketball game.
That was such a serendipitous event for us to have found ourselves at.
We had talked about it last year while watching it. March Madness, every year in March, there's a giant basketball tournament in the States where all the best Division I college basketball teams play to determine who the best is. And it's nationally televised. It's where all the best players are. They go on to play in the NBA. Very, very select few. And it's very, very passionate time for these players. Some of them will be the last game, competitive game they ever really play, the end of their college career, and some of them are just trying to make that big step, that make their dreams come true, and it happens for some, but it doesn't for a lot of them.
It's similar to the energy at the Olympics, where people just have spent a lifetime training for this singular moment, or in this instance, the tournament itself, but you can really see the difference in, the heart that they're playing with, which is so exciting as a fan to be watching. And you alluded to for a full year, it hasn't been that we've been talking about going to this tournament for a year, but a year ago when we were watching March Madness, we thought, well, maybe sometime in the future we'll go and watch these games in person. And at the time we thought maybe Salt Lake City would be cool. Fast forward to this March, we just happened to be in LA for this podcast conference and realized that probably, 20 feet away was the Crypto Center. Yeah. And they just happened to be hosting a doubleheader game on the Thursday of our trip. Got cheap tickets. We didn't have to miss a single session of the conference to go to the game. They were the most exciting, entertaining, just emotional games that we could possibly ask for. So it felt like it was really meant to be.
Yeah, and that's just a little part of the trip. But I guess the reason we're there is to try to learn to be the best podcasters we can be and what knowledge we can take away from that and how to implement that into our show moving forward. And we are just filled up with ideas now.
Filled to the brim. We still haven't had a opportunity just yet to truly internalize this and digest.
Yeah.
But I know that we're both bursting with ideas, which feels so exciting.
Yeah, this afternoon we're going to have a full day of just kind of figuring out the direction. We went to South by Southwest and the event in Orlando. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things from all those conferences that we want to talk about and see how we can move forward in the best way possible.
I don't know how you feel about this because you may not have as much experience with this idea of retreats that I do. So I've throughout my life attended mostly wellness retreats, yoga retreats or creative things, and I've loved them. I am somebody that really needs that length of time to feel transformation. Like it's nice to go away for a night or a weekend, and I recognize that that's often all that people have available to them. But having this 5, 6, 7 days of immersion, I feel has such a stronger impact on me. What I've learned from these conferences is that I really thrive in these learning environments. I like the stimulation. You and I, when we go to a city, I mean, going to a beach or something is lovely too for recovery, but you and I tend to be at our best when we're stimulated and exploring, when we're on an adventure, when we're taking in new places, new people, new learning. So that's been really, that's just been a good personal observation to have made through the this past month.
Yeah, I think that's part of the, where we thrive in. I think we've known that for a little bit of time, just from traveling and kind of just knowing what excites us, I guess. But yeah, these types of events, they are very exhausting, very tiring. You're moving all day. Well, that's kind of our own fault. We just walk everywhere instead of taking cabs. But and then you're in sessions all day. You're just absorbing all this information. And by the evening, your brain is just full and overflowing, and you're exhausted mentally from that. Mm-hmm. And from walking 20 kilometers, getting around from event to event and taking it all in. So physically and mentally by the end of it, and this has been kind of a month straight of doing this. So it's been a nice few days just trying to settle back into things here, knowing we're not going anywhere for a little bit. So we can really, really kind of just take note of all the things that we did do, and we didn't even talk about like a lot of the stuff that actually happened that was exciting, just because we didn't have the time yet.
I know, it's so wild. I'm excited just to hang this afternoon and yeah, kind of recap on what life has
and
been.
It's sunny out, we can sit in the backyard.
The first day home, I got to hang my sheets on the line. And if any of you out there are like me, hanging your sheets on the line is one of the joys of adulthood. So that was really, really nice to come home to. But before we move on to our thoughts and things segment, is there anything from the LA trip, be it about the city, the conference, any aspect that, aside from March Madness, that we know was a highlight for both of us, was there anything that really stood out that you wanted to mention?
Well, we talked a fair bit about the homelessness there, which isn't a good thing.
But memorable.
Very memorable. There's so much in the downtown core where we were staying. Like, we came up from the subway right in the core of Los Angeles downtown at like midnight on a Tuesday or whatever it was, and we were surrounded by just people strung out, people on drugs, people trying to survive. It felt like we came up into a new world.
It's a challenging topic to really offer you a sense of the severity of it, but also wanting to be sensitive and respectful. These are clearly people that have had difficult lives. There's clearly mental health issues and addiction. But it's also, as someone who's not exposed to the severity of the problem that they have there in LA, it's so alarming to be in that environment. And I apologize if this is like a graphic description, or I mean no offense. It's truly heartbreaking, but you really couldn't walk three or four blocks without a really dramatic, almost scary encounter. I wouldn't say I was afraid, but there's definitely a sense of awareness that you're surrounded, like quite literally surrounded by people that are not in their right mind.
Foaming at the mouth.
Yeah. Like
people punching
naked
the air,
and
screaming.
Like there's shit on the sidewalks everywhere. Yeah. Like it's pretty bad.
Yeah. And I don't know what the solution is there, but there's tens of thousands. I don't know what the official numbers are, but I'd say every 50 feet, there's a group in this particular area. And we weren't right in like Skid Row or anything. We're just in the normal downtown core, close to
office buildings. And
there's got to be tens of thousands of people who are in a very bad situation.
Yeah. And these aren't just people that don't have a place to live at night, which is bad enough. These are people with severe mental health and addiction challenges, clearly. And we talked about, like, where does this solution even begin? Because it's about affordability and the economy. It's about addiction. It's about mental health resources. There's higher populations there. You know, the climate is warm. So if you're looking for a place without a home, you want to be in a warmer climate. Like, there's all these tentacles to where this problem actually stems from, that there's no, you can't just like brushstroke a solution over it. So yes, this is something that we observe daily and talked about a lot.
And I know the Olympics are coming to LA in a few years, and I had heard a podcast with one of the people involved, one of the organizers, and they are trying to make drastic changes to be able to help this population. So hopefully something can come about this. And in every city, like it's increasing everywhere, which is very, very sad to see. And the housing crisis, the mental health epidemic, there's so many factors contributing to it. And yeah, I've never really seen anything this drastic as we did in LA. And that was a takeaway. Like the trip was amazing and we had an awesome time, but don't want to just gloss over that because that was something we experienced daily. And again, I never, other than coming out of the subway that night, the first night, and that was more just a shock thing because we weren't used to it, and late at night, and we're clearly tourists with dragging our suitcases, and there's just a lot of people around who are in unfortunate circumstances. And if we have, again, never were threatened or anything even remotely close to that. But that night just felt, just because we weren't prepared for that.
No, I think it's an important reflection. And as you said, it's, this obviously isn't an issue isolated to warm climates or America or Los Angeles. We had a friend come visit from the Annapolis Valley where I grew up in a very small town. And she said it's happening there even. Which is almost more alarming to think that these small places we grew up in, where if anything ever happened, the community rallied around you, but it's just getting to a point of, you know, saturation.
Yeah, lots of factors that, are leading to a lot of just, they say there's a lot of people just kind of a few things go the wrong way and they're just a normal family and it happens. I've never encountered anyone like that myself. Every homeless person who I've come across, especially in LA, was severely, had a severe mental illness or severe addiction.
Yeah.
But that could be a result of someone who was maybe forced out of their home or couldn't afford rent and end up in the street, and these things happen. Anyway, neither of us are experts on
everyone's
this.
Story is different. It's really just sharing the observation. And I think it's important because we know how lucky we have been to have these experiences. And I think it's very important that we point out that not only do we recognize that, but we have witnessed other human beings that are just, you know, going through the doesn't get more of a struggle than their circumstances.
Yeah.
So I think we came home with a lot of perspective about that part of our life as well. You know, just having a roof over our head and being able to go away to experience these things in the first place has been
gratitude
profound.
Gratitude is a huge thing. And this episode of Stoicism with Brandon Tumblin, great young fella, is that's a big component of it. Reflecting on your own life and being grateful for what you do have and realizing that, because a lot of people always want something else. They want the next thing to make them happy. And a big part of Stoicism is just being happy with the things that you do have. And we're always trying to grow our podcasts. We're always trying to do better in our careers, be more successful, all those things. And at the end of the day, we are doing great. And if a few more listeners would be nice and, you know, a few more opportunities, and we will certainly work to get those, but we're very, very lucky to have all the things that we do have, and we have to really recognize that and appreciate it.
And sitting down with someone like Brandon, who is so attuned to this way of thinking, was a really powerful reminder of how important that way of thinking and living really is.
Yeah.
He's an example of what this can look like. He's so smart. He's so well spoken, but really he's kind. He's a great listener. He has a podcast of his own, The Strong Stoic, that of course we talk about in this episode. Yeah. And I've been a guest on, and you're going to be
a
guest
on
yourself.
Soon, yeah.
So he's just inviting people into his life that he sees sort of embodying some of these practices. Stoicism, something you and I both have been interested in and read a little bit about or listened to podcasts about in the last couple of years. So sitting down with someone that knew so much more about it than we did was exciting.
And we never really dove into that much about his personal life, which is something we often do. And I guess I want to say that off the top, because we just dove right into what does Stoicism tell us all about it. And he was amazing. Like, we were like little kids basically asking a professor things for an hour and a half.
We were apologetic after, like, oh my God, so tell us about you. Yeah. Because exactly as you said, we were just so grateful to have somebody with his level of knowledge and experience that we couldn't help but really drill into the Stoic part of this interview and episode.
So I think, listening to his own podcast, The Strong Stoic, would be a great start to getting to know him after you listen to this.
Because you're not going to know anything about him from this interview.
You know, his name is Brandon and he knows a lot about Stoicism. But no, he's a really nice guy and he's got Newfoundland connections and South Shore connections. Grew up, I believe, in a family of fishermen. And he's just a hardworking, nice guy. And we should get into our thoughts and things first here before we dive into the episode.
Thoughts and things, thoughts and things, thoughts and things, thoughts and things.
Okay, you have one picked out there?
So obviously we had to pick a Stoic philosopher.
Obviously.
And there's the three big ones that everyone references: Marcus Aurelius, Seneca, and Epictetus. But the very first Stoic, which I had read about, I couldn't remember his name. We talk about it in the episode, and obviously he knew his name, but it's Zeno. And I looked up a few Zeno quotes, and one that I really liked that stood out: man conquers the world by conquering himself.
So simple, but so much in that.
Yeah.
We actually dig a little bit into this ideology in the interview. And it's an aspect of Stoicism that I love, in that a good deed, we'll call it, or self-care, taking care of yourself, growing, learning, transforming your own self is actually of benefit to the world, to everyone around you. So that's how I interpret this. Like, conquering your own self is actually in service to everyone else as well. It's almost as though selfishness doesn't exist.
Well, it's like when you're on a plane and it's crashing, you're supposed to put the oxygen mask on yourself before you put it on anyone else, right?
I suppose.
And you got to make sure you're okay so you can help the other people around you. If you go for them first, you're not looking after yourself. This is a great analogy. I'm loving this. So you're able to look after more people and take care more of the world when you're in good shape yourself.
Did you choose this quote so you could use the airplane analogy?
No, this just came up on the fly.
So clever.
Yeah, no, I'm just, great at making these analogies.
I used to give this advice to clients when I was doing massage therapy way back when, and in particular, moms would come in and really need a break, really need to relax, but they'd be going through their to-do list or worried about their kids, whatever, like never putting themselves first. And I would tell them, you're here for the hour. You've already booked the appointment. You've already paid for it. Why not give yourself the gift of just being here for you? And chances are you will leave here better off for all of these people in your life that you're worried about in this moment anyways.
Yeah.
And whether or not that resonated, it was just the way that I felt about those circumstances. And I try to think about that in my own life as well, that it's okay to ask for what I need or pay attention to myself, because it really is helping, well, you, but others around me in my life as well, to be rested or happy or have clarity, whatever it is that you're working on.
Yeah, it just allows us to come into the world as a better version of ourselves, and then we're able to just do those little things and pick up on little things. If you're just worried about all these issues related to yourself, maybe you're not even that aware of what's happening around you. You're not able to recognize that someone needs your help or is going through something hard. So I think it's a good quote.
That's a good thoughts and things for this week. And Brandon certainly expands on this idea and many more in this episode. So we know you'll learn something, not about him, but about stoicism for sure.
So yeah, great guy. Brandon, I want to thank you for coming on and just giving us all this information, a wealth of knowledge you are. So let's jump into this with Brandon Tumblin.
Well, I would say the awkward part is for the person that has to go up and turn on the cameras, because I don't know, but it feels really weird when you have a guest come in and you're just like, yeah, let me just turn
like
on these cameras.
Like a confessional or something. This is your interrogation officially starting.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we've officially started your interrogation here today.
So I got no way out.
Yeah. Thanks for being here. I mentioned to you before we started recording that this idea of stoicism and the practices is something that we've talked about often on the podcast.
Yeah.
And I would say Mike and I practice some of those virtues, but I know that you're more of an expert than we are and would just love to hear some of the background and your experience, and maybe start by just asking how this philosophy was introduced to you.
Yeah, I mean, for anyone who's seen the movie Gladiator, that's kind of what got me interested in it. There's the old character, Marcus Aurelius. He's one of the three Stoics that have works that actually survive the test of time. Not just the test of time, but also just time period, because a lot of the old Stoic documents got kind of just lost to history, right? So Marcus Aurelius, he's a very interesting character. He's a Roman emperor. He's very, very powerful, but also very, very humble and kind of a nerd, to be honest. Like, if you think about who he is, he's a warrior of sorts, but he's also a nerd. And so I guess maybe that's what I aim to be subconsciously, is a nerdy warrior of sorts. So I was always interested in that character. And then over time, I picked up his meditations book, which is basically a journal of his own thoughts. And slowly got into Stoicism. And I got to admit that when I started my podcast, The Strong Stoic Podcast, I knew, just looking back, maybe like 5% of what I probably should have known before making a podcast called The Strong Stoic Podcast. So it was really just a huge learning curve. I ended up getting introduced to some contemporary Stoics who really started to point me in good directions in terms of learning the philosophy. And I've wrestled with a lot of the Stoic ideas, but over time, I've ultimately come back to accept most of what they say, which is very interesting. But I've never taken anything what they say at point value, because some of them are weird ideas. But with time, you kind of understand that they make sense in the way that the Stoics think about it. So a weird introduction to Stoicism. But for anyone who wants to watch the movie Gladiator, and if you find the old nerdy warrior kind of a cool thing to consider, you know, you might want to look into Stoicism.
I think it's pretty amazing that Meditations, which you mentioned there, was never meant to be a published book. That was just his journal, his thoughts that he was keeping to himself. And I'm not sure the story how it was discovered and came to be this famous book that we now celebrate in that world. But this was just him figuring out how to go through his life, figuring out his day, how to be the best version of himself. And it wasn't written with the intent of other people learning from it. What was your takeaway when you read that the first time?
The first time, I remember, honestly, the first chapter was really boring. Yeah. probably no one's going to want to read the book now. But the first chapter, for those who know, it's a chapter on gratitude. And now, I just reread it recently. I love that chapter now because, you know, when you first think about Stoicism, you get introduced into some of the basic concepts, the dichotomy of control, what's up to me, what's not up to me. And it seems as sort of a self-centered philosophy, but as you get into it more and more, it's really a philosophy of love and family and community and gratitude. And so now I go back and I reread Meditations, and I just love the parts where he's talking about what his father taught him, what his mother taught him. And so I guess my first introduction to Meditations was, okay, let's just skip the first chapter and get into the good stuff. And Yeah, just started to get into some really practical advice. And one of the things I'll say I did notice at the time, again, that kind of annoyed me, but as I get more into it, it interests me, is it's very repetitive. And there's a reason for that. It's, as you said, it was his personal journal. And now I look back at that and I say, well, we should look at meditations, yes, as a source of Stoic knowledge, but also how we should journal, because, and how we should go on this journey of self-improvement, because he's telling himself the same things over and over and over again. Why? Because he's struggling with it consistently. He's always going back to be kind to people, be nice. You're going to deal with people in the world that are rude, that are not up to any good, and you can have your wits about you and you can be good regardless of that. And he's always, these themes just reoccur throughout the whole book. And again, I look at that as, that's how we should be thinking about this. It's not a perfect journey. You don't write in your journal one day, be kind to others, and then you leave being kind to others for the rest of your life. Like, you're going to have these ups and downs, and that's okay. I mean, Marcus Aurelius, he's one of the Stoics in history, period, that we talk about today. And he had to always re-remind himself of these lessons.
When you first started getting into this text and philosophy, did it feel like a spiritual practice that was missing from your life? I know that you watch this film, you're attracted to this character and seeing something in him. But I think back to it, Mike, it was you that really introduced me to Stoicism. I had an interest in philosophy and I studied that in university, but you introduced it to me because I was going through a hard time in my life and I was feeling like I wasn't really connecting with some of the spiritual practices I used to. I needed something that was more logical. I needed something that maybe I could sit and read about instead of just sitting with my own thoughts. Like, what was it for you that maybe felt like a spiritual benefit?
Yeah, I think the spiritual side of Stoicism, what I really found, it's really the community aspect of it, which again goes underappreciated. You know, again, a lot of people think of the dichotomy of control. 100%, that's a Stoic thing. But if you were to practice Stoicism in daily life, most of what you want to think about is, how can I be more pro-social? How can I have this interaction that's in front of me be of greater benefit to me, to them, to the world? And that's a very spiritual aspect of Stoicism. I think a lot of the self-improvement and the self-help stuff that comes out today, it's very individualistic, very self-centered, it's very self-focused. And Stoicism, again, it kind of grabs you when you first get into this because it kind of promises those self-help benefits. It's like you can focus on what's up to you and what's not up to you. But again, as you get into it, you start to realize, no, there's a community here. Like, you are supposed to see yourself in a humble way in relationship to everyone around you. You're supposed to try and be useful to people, be good, be virtuous. And that's ultimately for the benefit of you, yes, but for other people, for the world, and so on. So I think that's something that I would say that at the time when I first got into Stoicism, I didn't really have that sense of community, not just like local community. I mean, I have a family, of course, and I have friends, but just community with everybody, with the world, just being able to go out into the world and have an interaction with someone and see that as an opportunity to be pro-social, to be a good person and to gain another connection.
Yeah.
You had mentioned the first chapter in Meditations is on gratitude. And the first time you read it, it didn't necessarily resonate with you, but it did later on. Is gratitude a part of your life now?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I try and do every morning, I'll list out a few things. I started a kind of a gratitude journaling thing.
Yeah.
But I would say even before that, one of the things I noticed last year was that every Friday night I was getting into this habit of having just a sense of gratitude. And I don't know if that was just how I was living my life or if it was just a habit that I got into. But yeah, absolutely. I think gratitude is important. It's the opposite of, obviously, ingratitude, but it's the opposite of resentment, of bitterness. Gratitude is not how can I get more? It's what do I already have that I can appreciate?
Yeah.
And we miss that so much. Like we always want more. We always want more. But you know, if you think about it, a lot of the things that we have right now, a year ago, we would have told ourselves if we would have had those things, we're going to be so happy and everything's going to be perfect. You know, Stoicism would say, well, take a minute and just have a bit of perspective here. There's things that you want that A, aren't going to make you happy anyway. because they're indifferent. They're not your, it's not your character. And B, you know, you've already told yourself you're going to be happy getting certain things. And, you know, that's not what happened. Happiness comes from something completely different from externals, from possessions. So, yeah, gratitude is appreciating what you already have. One of the biggest things of that is people, the people around you, yeah. You know?
Yeah. That feeling of satisfaction can be so fleeting at times. It's a nice way to keep yourself sort of even and content. And I find a lot of the modern wellness practices are really just, I hesitate to say rooted in capitalism because that's a really bold statement to make. And I know there are a lot of well-intended practitioners in this work, but I am really drawn to Stoicism because of the logical side of it. I wondered if you could talk a little bit about how that aspect is maybe a little bit different than some of the modern spiritual practices.
Yeah, sure. So Stoicism is fundamentally, it's a rational philosophy. And they have this idea, essentially, that evolutionarily speaking, the one thing that human beings have that no other species have is our rational brain. And this is true. They knew this over 2,000 years ago, but we have a special part of our brain, prefrontal cortex, which is rational and logical. So they see that as really the gift from nature to human beings. And so they think, well, if that's the one thing that separates us from the rest of the animal kingdom and other species, maybe that's how we can actually find eudaimonia, which is really what they call happiness. So there's nothing supernatural in Stoicism. Now, Marcus Aurelius, Epictetus, Seneca, they did have local gods at the time, local meaning history-wise, locally, like at that time, point in time, they did believe in deities. But Stoicism in and of itself has a god per se. It's nature. It's a pantheistic philosophy, which is God is nature. There's nothing supernatural. There's nothing out of this world. But yeah, that's essentially the small of it, is that nature has this rationality throughout it, which they would call logos, actually. It's kind of a Christian term as well. And that we all share in that. We all have a little piece of that logos, that rationality. Even the soul, there is a Stoic soul, but it's physical. And I know that sounds really, really crazy, but what it means is that if you can imagine what is virtue, what is being a good person, most of it's habit. Right? It's like what we get up and what we do every day, how we practice kindness. If you can get your brain neurochemistry wired and your whole system wired over time through habit to be a person that does the right thing, then your soul, in the Stoic sense, your physical soul, your physical body is virtuous. And so there's no connection, no divine connection per se, though, again, I got to admit that a lot of the ancient Stoics did believe in a deity or deities, but the philosophy of Stoicism in and of itself is entirely rational and honestly entirely scientific in how we think about it today.
Nice. What are some of the key principles that Stoics practice, just for listeners out there who maybe never read much about it or even hearing about it for the first time, like in the most basic terms? I know gratitude is one, just being thankful for the things that you do have, but what does a practicing Stoic like yourself do in day-to-day life? Let's say five things, because I know there are a bunch of different things that
sure
can fall under the umbrella, but yeah, let's break it down just in simple terms.
I'd say journaling is a key Stoic practice, which it is for a lot of different philosophies because it's very self-reflective. And when you're journaling with a purpose, you're journaling, you're looking back at your day, where you went wrong, what you can do tomorrow to do better. And that's all it really is. Kindness is a very important thing. Love, kindness, affection, this sort of pro-social attitude that we alluded to earlier. So when you go out into the day-to-day life, remind yourself in the morning, as Marcus Aurelius, he has a beautiful passage about this at the start of book two, where he says, go out in the day, accept that some people are going to be rude. Some people are going to be even evil. People are going to be trying to get the better of you. They might even be trying to upset you, but you still have agency over how you react to things. You can still be good despite everyone else maybe not being so bad. And more than that, but to also forgive them for that, which is a very crazy idea. You think about going out into the world and someone flips you off in traffic. Marcus Aurelius would say, well, actually, forgive them. Like, don't, you know, because we've all probably flipped people off in traffic ourselves, right?
Mm.
an element of Stoicism that I like also that kind of gets slid under the radar a little bit is strength, which is fortitude or a competence of what you do. So courage is one of the four cardinal virtues, but what they meant by courage was courage and how we think about it, but also strength, fortitude. So in a simple way of thinking about this is if you're going to be courageous, let's say in war, you can't really do that unless you also have competency, unless you also have, you know, the ability to use, let's say, a rifle, the ability to run. And so what we see is that Stoicism is all about being useful to the world. And in order to be useful, you have to gain some competency in something. Now, that's not to say that people that don't have any competency are like useless individuals or anything like that. What it says is that, no, you should aim to be someone who can do things that's of benefit to the world. Again, that pro-social attitude. So I don't know what is that for. We got gratitude, journaling, mm-hmm. kindness,
strength.
Let me see if I can think of one more.
Would resiliency be separate from those, or like?
I'd say it would be tied in with that.
Yeah.
Because courage and strength, it's obviously physical in some capacity, but really it's like that mental strength, which is resiliency. Yeah. Yeah. Mm.
You use the word virtues a couple of times, and it's my understanding there are four basic virtues of Stoicism. Is that correct?
Yeah, there's four. They're called cardinal virtues, okay. Which means every other virtue hinges upon them. Really, it means that the cardinal virtues are pure. So, meaning they, if you think about generosity, that's not a cardinal virtue. It's a virtue. It's virtuous to be generous. But you can be so generous to the point where you give away everything you own and then you starve to death, and that's not a virtuous thing. So the Stoics would say, yeah, generosity is a virtue. It's not a cardinal virtue. The cardinal virtues are always good. So that's justice, wisdom, courage, and temperance, or you might think of moderation. So yeah, those are the four virtues. There are different ways of thinking about it, but Stoicism, like the idea of virtue, they're not really separated. And what I mean by that is courage, the courageous act is also a just act, is also a wise act, is also a temperate act.
Right.
Right. So like you can't really say, okay, well, that's a just act, but that's not a courageous act.
Mm-hmm.
Because then it's not a just act if it's not courageous. So it's helpful to think about Stoicism in those four cardinal virtues, as long as you understand that ultimately you can't just be one of those things. That's not how it works, right? It's just different ways of looking at the same virtue.
And were the virtues and the framework for Stoicism, did that evolve over time? Or was it like, how did that become determined, or who determined that as being, yeah, how we practice this?
Yeah, so I'm not quite sure on the history of this, but if I remember correctly, it's actually Aristotle who came up with the cardinal virtues. It was Aristotle or Plato, who weren't actually Stoics, but they're kind of in the same historical time period. So, they were kind of evolved later. Marcus Aurelius talks quite a bit about the virtues, but the earlier Stoics, presumably, because we don't have any of their writings, you know, they really talked more about like live according to nature, which is what you'll hear about Stoicism as well, to live according to nature. But yeah, it certainly evolved over time. And I think the cardinal virtues was something that was sort of added on after. Each of the Stoics added on a little piece, just as like every scientist today adds on a little bit of piece to the puzzle. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
This day and age with social media and the constant comparing yourself to others feels like Stoicism is more important now than ever, really.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's that element of it, the social media part. And then there's just like the individualistic nature that I think is not good. We were never, meaning human beings, we're never meant to be separate. I tend to be on the introverted scale of things, but I can't live without people. I could never live in a cabin by myself forever. Like we thrive on social interactions. Social interactions was how we survived in evolution, is by coming together and forming communities and eventually cities and the world and societies. And so, yeah, I think one of the best things that we can take from Stoicism in our modern world is just that idea that you're not just living for you. Like you can't. There's no way you can be fulfilled and happy in life if you just live for yourself. And that includes not taking advantage of people. It includes not looking at yourself as like a one-man show. You know, like, I don't care who you are. You haven't gotten to where you are today alone. I can point to like 20 people that helped me along my road to where I am today. And you got to have appreciation for that, even for your previous ancestors that aren't even alive right now. Mm-hmm. Where you are is as a result of what they did. And so I think, again, to get back to the gratitude thing, you should have so much gratitude for everyone in your life that's helped you even a little bit. And you should aim to be that person that helps other people as well. So it's not just about you. It's about being pro-social. It's about community.
And stoicism, obviously, gratitude's very important, and being grateful for the people who were good to you in your life or gave you that little extra push or whatever it may be. But I also know that a big part of it is learning from the hard things and obstacles. And the obstacle is the way is one of the, I'm not sure who actually said that, but yeah. I know that it's about having these hard things happen and realizing this is the way to move forward, to get past it, to be better. What does that mean to you?
Yeah, that's one of the weird ideas in Stoicism, because it says very dogmatically that virtue is the only good. And they meant that virtue is the only good, meaning who you are as a person is the only thing that matters. Mm-hmm. Nothing else matters. That includes money, how much money you have. It includes what food you're eating today. It includes whether or not you just got fired from your job. So when you have this viewpoint, again, it's a dogmatic viewpoint that virtue is the only good. What it means is that anything that happens to you is not good or bad. And that's a hard pill to swallow, right? It's a very hard pill to swallow because you think, well, hold on, I just got fired from my job 3 months ago and I can barely afford rent right now. How is that not a bad thing? And the answer is because, well, if you look at this through the perspective of character, through virtue, what can you learn from that? How can you make yourself better? If you got fired and you didn't see it coming, maybe you're missing a little bit of self-awareness there. Maybe you're not performing at your job well. Maybe you're not as kind as you should be to your coworkers. There's 100 different reasons on how you can improve. That doesn't really matter. What matters to the Stoic is, well, sorry, it does matter. That's the only thing that matters is improving. But the fact that you got fired, that's an external. Did you have a part to play in that? Probably. And so what do? You go back and you say, well, what could I have done different? How could I make myself better? Not better for the sake of power, but better for the sake of being a better person, being wiser, you know, being able to give back more.
Something I found actually really liberating about this way of thinking is that the practice would teach you that things that you do for yourself or things that you do for others are one and the same, in that by improving yourself, so yes, I got fired from my job, that act of self-reflection and improvement is actually benefiting the greater good. And I just found that so beautiful because it gives a little bit of liberty in how we use our resources. So maybe you feel like, oh, I'm not volunteering enough, or I'm not there for my friends enough, or whatever your example might be, but working on yourself first is actually in service to those people as well. And that was just a real game changer for how I looked at my life.
Yeah, 100%. And it is. There are circles of concern, meaning if you think about like yourself as your inner circle, that's you. Then you might expand that circle out to your family, your immediate family, and then maybe your friends and your local community. And to your point, you might think of something that you might be doing for yourself, not just for yourself in a selfish way. It has to be done in the right way, because you can imagine you could do things for yourself if you thought, stealing off people was something for yourself. Stoics would say that that's actually not for yourself. You might think it is. I'm getting money, but money is an indifferent. Money is an external. Money doesn't matter. Again, if we look at virtue is the only good, stealing off other people, you might think it's for you, but it's because it's not my words, the Stoics' words, you're not wise enough to know that actually character is the only good, then that if you're stealing off someone, you know, that's not a good reflection of your character, and it shouldn't be what you focus on. That being said, what is also an external? Stealing. Stoics would say stealing is not necessarily good or bad. Mm-hmm. What if you're a mother with a young child and you've tried your best to get more work and you can't get any more work and there's no opportunity in your area? Maybe stealing off Walmart might be a good thing. Now, I'm not encouraging people to go steal off Walmart, absolutely. But this idea in Stoicism is that nothing in and of itself is good or bad. It's how we use it and why we're using it, what our intentions are. And if our intentions are good, then that act, whatever it is good.
Would Stoics still encourage you to feel a spectrum of emotion, recognizing that most of the way we look at the world isn't categorized as good or bad? So would they offer permission to feel elation and joy and celebration and also sadness and anger and resentment in that spectrum of emotion?
Certainly the positive emotions. In fact, Stoics tend to be pretty cheerful people, if you look at it. Seneca has this quote I love, which it's something like, I would never have joy robbed from your house. He's writing to a friend of his. And basically what he's saying there, even though joy is not the point of Stoicism, it's something that kind of naturally comes about as you practice these principles. You can imagine if you have a meaningful job and you're giving back to your community and you have good relationships, like you're probably going to have some joy from time to time. Resentment, anger, those are emotions that the Stoics would say are not good emotions. Not to say that we can ever completely eliminate them, but that if you're feeling those things, it's probably a sign that something's not right and that you need to address those. And so absolutely, everyone gets angry from time to time. Everyone gets a little resentful and a little bitter. Journaling can bring that out, which is a great example of how that can be useful. You feel a bit of bitterness inside, you maybe write about it and figure out where it's coming from. But yeah, in sum, they try and reduce the negative emotions you feel while really maximizing the positive emotions. But just with the understanding that the positive emotions in and of themselves are not the point. The point is virtue. The positivity comes because of virtue and not the other way around.
Yes.
Right.
Yep.
When you were growing up, did you have any of these ideas with you at all, or is this just something you found later in life?
Well, this is what's great. I'm assuming you have some Nova Scotian listeners. So I'm from Nova Scotia, and a lot of the Stoic principles are fundamentally in our culture today, right? So my dad was a lobster fisherman. He still is, actually, and a long-lining fisherman. And yeah, there was always that idea, obviously working hard, which is a Stoic value. Just the importance of strength, of being able to provide and be there for people, the importance of just trying to treat people well, just try and be a good person. You know, we can talk, I have like over 300 episodes on The Strong Stoic about Stoicism, but if you think about it, just try and be a good person. Most people know what that means, like roughly, you know.
Nova Scotians nail it pretty good, to be honest. We're naturally Stoic here.
I think it's, actually, I'd be curious to know your opinion on this. I think it's a combination of the industry we're in. So fishing was predominantly the industry for many generations here. It's naturally humbling. You have to work with your hands a lot of times for pennies. But people here do tend to have more of that Stoic mindset. I don't know if you guys have any theories.
Do you think that we're in one of those portal energy centers, maybe Nova Scotia? I believe.
Well, I think there's probably a combination of, like, a lot of Nova Scotians come from, well, where I'm from, I'm in Cape Breton. All my ancestors are poor. Like, everyone's ancestors were either Scottish, Irish, hardworking people who left there because either they were kicked off their land to make room for sheep, or they had to try to find jobs in the New World. And how brave are you to cross the ocean into a place you never saw a picture of to get a job in a place you never saw online anyway. But then the French people, like, I have French ancestors, they were kicked off their land to make room for other people. I go even further back, I have indigenous ancestors, and obviously that's a tough part of history here in Canada. And you look at most Nova Scotians have a lot of ancestors who maybe were falling upon hard times at some point. And I think naturally, to get through these hard times, you have to have this positive outlook on life. You have to be grateful for the little things. And I think that the East Coast of Canada is definitely one of the kindest places in the world. I say the kindest place in the world. And we've referenced this before when the wildfires happened, that we just had so much support, so many people reaching out to us to offer us whatever they could. And yeah, this all this ancestor stuff is obviously a long time ago, but I think in our blood that's partially there. And again, yeah, all these people came over and had to work these a lot of hard jobs like fishing or mining or whatever it may be. And this is all just a theory here, but I feel like it has some truth to it. We've
also had the benefit of traveling so many places in the world and really putting this culture to the test. So we go as ambassadors for Nova Scotia because it truly is a place that we're proud of, and have people remark on our kindness, not just you and I, but Canada in particular, Eastern Canada even more so, and then Nova Scotia even more, you know, reduced down to this identity that we've created. And I suppose we're constantly learning from those who came before us. So it's an outcome of our upbringing to be kind and to be tough, to be disciplined. This is something that's just embedded in us. But I don't think that most are thinking of this as a way of, like, as a lifestyle, in particular with literature written about it and guidelines written about it, and to consider it as a spiritual practice. This is one of the pieces that excites me the most about this, is that I may not connect to traditional religion or, you know, some of that infrastructure, but Stoicism to me just feels really accessible. I love that there's a balance between logic and what I'll call spirituality. Like, it still feels like a meaningful practice to me that maybe I would otherwise be missing from my life by not practicing a religion. But it sort of fills that gap for consistency, for community, for that real self-awareness that I think we all can benefit from. So I would say a lot of people in Nova Scotia are unintentionally or maybe unassuming in their practice of this, but we do really have this in common as a local culture, don't we?
I think so, and I like the I like what you mentioned there about the hardships historically, because I've never quite thought about it in that way. And I have thought it in the way of weather, which is another hard thing that we have to deal with, not just us, but we tend to get hit pretty frequently with weather. And in fact, it's a great example of what Stoicism is. So when I was a kid, and still to this day, when there's a storm coming, you know, the old man would have to button up his building and do all kinds of preparatory things. So you hear there's a storm coming in 3 days. Well, what do you do? You could just throw your hands up and say, okay, well, whatever the storm does is what the storm does. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to be okay with that. Some people confuse that with Stoicism, but it's not. You can only say that after you've done everything you can to make sure that the storm is not going to damage you. Mm-hmm. So what do? You close your windows, you lock your windows, you shut the doors, you add some ropes to your doors, you put away your buoys, you put away your traps, you tie your boat up extra tight, you make sure you have food, you make sure you have water, flashlights, batteries, a generator, fresh water. You do all of these things days in advance to prepare for the storm. And once you've done that, once you can sit down and honestly say, you know what, I've done everything I possibly could to prepare for this, now it's all outside of my control. Mm-hmm. Then the storm can come through. The storm can rip your wharf apart. It can damage your house. It can sink one of your boats, which it's done to my family for generations. And ultimately, is that an unpleasant thing? Yeah, it is an unpleasant thing. But is it a bad thing? Is it not to the Stoics, because you've done everything you could to prepare for that. Mm. And after that, it's not up to you. Do you got to work extra hard maybe for the next few weeks to get yourself back aligned? Absolutely. But guess what? That's up to you. That's within your control. Mm-hmm. You can't stop that storm from coming, but you can prepare for it, and you can have the right mentality about it while it's going on and afterwards.
Hi, friends of Mike and Kristen. My name is Nancy Regan, and it's a pleasure and privilege to be a sponsor of this podcast because I love the way these two creators show up. I spent a big chunk of my life on TV, projecting an air of confidence to an audience of more than 250,000 people. The spotlight lit me up, but the truth is, for most of that time, I didn't feel my own light. I was wearing a social mask to show the world I had it all together, even when I felt close to falling apart. The fear of failure haunted me because I didn't want anyone to know the secret I harbored, that I was not enough. Not smart enough, not talented enough, just not enough. The good news is I've left that lens behind. I traded in my inner imposter for a life of liberating authenticity. It hasn't been an easy path, but man, is it worth it. I share my story with a whopping dose of vulnerability in my book, From Showing Off to Showing Up. As I see it, showing off is living a life according to the expectations of others, craving approval. Showing up is, here I am, take me or leave me. And the beautiful, gratifying, and deeply comforting result is that I've heard from hundreds of readers who say they see themselves in my story. If something about this resonates with you, come along for the journey. From Showing Off to Showing Up is available in paperback, ebook, and now audiobook, read by me, of course. I promise I'll show up. Will you?
I've heard fighters say kind of a similar thing where the training camp and everything leading up to the fight is the hard part, and the fight itself is whatever happens. If they put in the time and energy and everything they possibly could, then it's not up to them anymore. Whatever goes down is going to go down. And obviously they probably want to win and take the benefits that come with that. But if they know they put in the work and the every aspect that they could control, then the fight itself, maybe you're going to be bested by someone who's just better than you.
Yeah.
It's so liberating. And I would argue that a lot of people feel out of control, in particular in the modern world, that all of this is happening around us or to us. Mm-hmm. But I really like this idea that it's a reclaiming of that ownership of yourself. How might somebody who's just dabbling in some of these ideas, would you suggest, get started in training their mind to be more tolerant and accepting of some of these external things happening in us?
So I think just knowing the dichotomy of control principle, there's some things up to us, there's some things not up to us. Just knowing what those are incredibly useful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I talk obviously with a lot of people, and you'll hear things sometimes like people might say, you made me mad or you upset me. And maybe you did say something that upset that person, right? But at the end of the day, we have to be careful with our wording, because if you want to take the Stoic idea that virtue is the only good, well, what that means is that you only have control over your response to things. So someone can be rude to you, someone can be mean to you, but you, as long as you are doing what you can, that's all you can really do. I mean, you can't control what other people say, right? So, yeah, I think just knowing that principle, I am responsible and I have agency over my responses. Anger doesn't, and that person that cut me off in traffic doesn't, and the person that, you know, gave me the finger at the Tim Hortons drive-thru, they don't have any agency over me either. I have control over that. That's a great place to start, because when you start talking to people and you start listening carefully to how people speak about their problems, they do externalize it. And I should say we, because I'm sure I do that a lot of times too. And I catch myself, you know, you made me mad. Well, no, I made me mad. Mm. Because whatever you said that I'm saying made me mad, it's my opinion about what you said that made me mad. So someone could give me a criticism and I could say, okay, maybe there's some truth in that and I'm going to make myself better, or I can get angry. And those are two completely different responses, and I get to choose which of those responses I do.
So someone, let's just create a hypothetical scenario in a learning context here. Someone says something to me and it makes me upset. Then I realize, oh yeah, I have control over how I feel. And you try to feel not mad about it, but you still do. How do you just make this a practice? How do you get better every time? Like, is it just doing it? Like, repetitively doing it?
Yeah, it's just repetitively doing it. I think that's a huge part. Practice makes perfect. That's why journaling is a key thing. You go through it. I mean, I still get angry about stuff all the time. You know, it's a human emotion, right? And you do the best with what you can. There's an element of obviously self-forgiveness there that you have to understand that, yeah, the Stoic idea is an ideal, and we're probably never going to get there, but we can still move closer to that. So journaling, I think, again, just to go back to that, is a very important thing because it allows you to reflect on things like that. And a very simple question, if you're not sure where to start, just write in your journal, what caused me suffering today? What caused me suffering today? Mm-hmm. Oh, that guy at work said something stupid to me and I got really angry. I was suffering because of that. Okay, well, why? You start dissecting that down.
Do you think all the suffering we ever experience is all because of our ego?
You know, ego slips its way into pretty much everything.
Yeah.
It's a lot of our problems does come down to ego. That's why, again, this idea of actually, we haven't talked about this. There's an idea in Stoicism that's really important. It's a spiritual idea that they see the whole universe, the cosmos is what they would call it, as an organism. And they don't mean it's, you know, it has like a heartbeat or anything like that. If you think about what you are as a human being, you're a compilation of trillions of cells. You can also look at the universe as that, the cosmos as a bunch of little components that make up the greater whole. If that's too spiritual for you, just think about humanity. There's what, 7-8 billion people on the planet right now. You're 1 in 7 or 8 billion. So you are a little piece in the greater whole. The problem we have, ego, is that in our heads, we feel like we are the greater whole and we're not. And this gets down to this idea of being useful to society and to the world. Recognize that you have agency and you have a lot of control over how you react to things, but you're also a very tiny piece in this really big universe as well. And so recognize that ultimately, you should probably be pretty humble because once you zoom out a little bit, you realize, like, just look at where we are right now. So there's the three of us in the room. And then if you zoom out, okay, we're in this house. How small of a section are we taking up in this house? Like a little bit, you can still see it. And then you zoom out to Nova Scotia. We're like a little pin. And you zoom out to Canada. You can't even see us anymore, right? Zoom out to the world. Zoom out to the universe, the solar system. Like, we're so small. A hard thing to accept because we are small. But again, I think a lot of our problems are rooted in ego.
It's simultaneously very empowering to think about this zoom out example in what we're truly part of. Like, that's this vast, energetic, you know, endless entity that we are part of and belong to and get to contribute to. So I find that also very exciting. I'd like to ask you, you mentioned journaling. What other exercises of discipline do you practice regularly in your life?
You want to get into ice baths?
Sure.
Dive right in, literally.
So again, to get back to courage and strength, how do we get stronger? How do we get stronger in the gym? Okay, we lift heavier weights. Mm-hmm. How do we get stronger in life? We go through hard things. If you want to become strong, you have to be careful with how much you're lifting, but ultimately you have to lift. You have to do things. One of the things that I think the three of us have in common is we do ice baths in the morning or any time of day, I suppose. I do mine in the morning. Part of that is a Stoic practice because when we're training resiliency, well, what's harder than getting in freezing cold water? Not an easy thing to do. Something else I would say is that most of my ancestors, at least, would get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and go out into freezing water for like hours and hours and hours. So I think I can do 3 minutes in the morning. I think I think I can handle that. But I'm not saying you have to go out there and do ice baths, but I think you have to make sure that you're keeping up your competence. Make sure you're staying strong and challenging yourself. You know, we like to be comfortable, but that's not really how we grow. So if you're in a job where, as an example, if you're in a job where, you know, it's kind of gotten boring, probably because you haven't done anything new in a little while. Maybe you need to step it up a little bit. Maybe you need to challenge yourself a little bit. We grow through discomfort, and that's kind of a crappy law in the universe, right? Mm-hmm. Isn't it? You have to be uncomfortable to grow, but that's just the way it is. So, you know, you have to add these things to your life, practically ice baths, but the foundation is exercise. I think everyone should be exercising, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have to lift weights. You don't have to be a knucklehead like me, but you can, maybe do a bit of cardio. You can go hiking. Just move your body
just
a little
walking,
bit.
Right?
Just walking. Yeah.
I want to ask both of you, because I know that we have this ice bath in common, and I, speaking for myself, but I expect you both have this in common, that knowing the benefits, knowing that we feel better after, and this could be said for a lot of examples, but there's still a moment of hesitation, of resistance, dare I say dread, before getting in that cold water. And the same could be said for other hard things that we challenge ourselves with, but I'm well aware of the benefits that it gives me. Why do you think, despite all this practice that we've had and, you know, aware of the outcome, that we still struggle with getting over that initial hurdle?
I think it's because it is hard. It is painful. It's not, our bodies and minds and entire being knows this isn't an easy thing. This isn't a joyful thing for the 3 minutes or whatever it may be. So we have resistance to it. And I think humans as a species, we have resistance to doing the hard things. And even what's the Art of War, the War of Art? I know there's two books, but the one where it's trying to, about overcoming resistance. Like, that's, even if you want to sit down and write a book and you love writing, there's still something that gets in the way of doing that. And I don't know what the exact scientific explanation for that is, but I think it's because it is something hard. We're just trying to ease back and not take that route, like to go the easy way. So I think it's with ice baths, it's like, we know we're going to feel better. We know we're going to be feel alive and alert, and all these chemicals, serotonin, norepinephrine, and all the good things are going to be flowing through our bodies afterwards. But that 3 minutes where we know it is actually hard, our bodies are telling us, or our minds are telling us, don't do this. Let's just go back in the bed, lay down, take it easy, scroll through Instagram.
I love how you've also inserted a different example, like this resistance that comes up with creativity, because that's something you and I and many of our listeners would experience too. And I think it's important also to clarify that it's not about that act of creation or getting in an ice bath that's supposed to get easier. It's, the goal is not, oh, eventually this is going to be easy for me, or I'm not going to feel this resistance before getting in the ice bath. The practice is about, yes, I have this feeling of resistance, but I'm going to do it anyways. Overcome. That's what I have found. The exercise, the strengthening of that muscle is what the goal is. Is that, would you say the same for your practice?
Absolutely. And you know what's crazy about this is, this isn't something that you can just do like once a month. This is something that you have to do every day. I kind of equate, it's kind of like the getting angry and dealing with that and like this gaining of perspective. I use the example of coffee grinds. So I love coffee. You get up in the morning, I grind my own beans and I pour the grinds into a pour over and pour my coffee. And without fail, there's going to be some grinds that end up on the counter. Now, I wish I could scrub that counter for a full hour on January 1st and it would be clean for the rest of the year. I wish I could make my bed 365 times January 1st and I wouldn't have to make it anymore for the rest of the year. That's not how it works. You have to do it every single day. You have to constantly, consistently do these little things that give you a little bit of resistance. And I think it's tremendously important to do those and not see it as a bad thing. I've been exercising, God, well over, probably 14, 15 years, I guess. So quite some time. I still get that resistance. I still get it where I'm like, you know what? I could just stay here and watch The Office. Right? Like I don't have to go to the gym. I rarely don't go. I normally 100% of the time, pretty damn close to 100% of the time, I go. And it's just, it's habit. But I think, to be honest with you, and I can't claim this is a stoic opinion on this, but I think about how I'm going to feel if I don't do it. I don't think about, sometimes I think about how I feel after I do it, because you do feel better afterwards. But I think, am I going to be really happy with myself in 3 hours when I've watched The Office for 3 hours and I could have went to the gym for 1 hour am I going to really be happy with myself? Am I going to go to bed tonight feeling okay? And there's no way in hell I could ever go to bed feeling good, knowing that I could have done something that I knew I should have done, that I was recovered for. Like, it's not like I had an injury or anything like that. There's no way I would feel good about myself. So as much as the positive emotion is a motivator, the negative emotion is also a very powerful motivator.
And it's being kind to your future self. We talked about this before, where the 2 months, the year, however many days or years from now, you're going to be a better version of yourself for doing it.
I love that. Yeah, an act of kindness towards yourself and to other people simultaneously.
Yeah, I find this very motivating to be kind to my future self. And something, I'll use a coffee example as well, because it's something simple that most of us do, is preparing my coffee for the next morning. So when I get up and it's 5 o'clock and I'm groggy and tired, then all I have to do is push a button instead. And the night before, that's a very simple thing for me to prepare for myself. And it's so easy to use your logic brain to get out of things such as exercise or cold dipping. And there's sort of this battle back and forth. I just finished in February, I did 100 pushups a day for this challenge.
Wow.
This was like a popular challenge that was going around in mental health awareness. And so come March 1st, I was then faced with this decision of, well, you've completed this challenge. Do I keep going because I'm in the routine of it, or just let it go? So March 1st, I did my 100 pushups. Come March 2nd, I wasn't feeling great. I hadn't slept well the night before. I had all these reasons to think, well, like, I already completed this thing. I don't really need to keep going. But I was very aware of how disappointed I might feel on March 3rd if I discontinued this streak. So despite all the resistance, I kept going and have kept it up every day since. Now, I don't know if and when this will end. I expect at some point it won't be available to me to keep that 100% streak going. But just to say that there's always a way to kind of work through those mental blocks that come up. So as much as you can rationalize yourself out of something, you can also use that same tool to get yourself that momentum that you need.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. I have a similar thing I say to myself that you mentioned there. I say, if you love yourself, meaning you want the best for yourself, you're going to act in such a way that you ultimately and increasingly respect yourself. So this is a pretty cool tool, because if you think about who you respect in your life, you could try and do the things that that person is doing, and then you're going to have a little bit of self-respect, and then you're going to have something that everybody seems to want today, confidence. People say you should have confidence in yourself. Well, how do you get confidence in yourself? It's by doing things that you respect, by having some self-respect because you've done some things. Now, if you're in a place where, you know, you don't have that, a great thing about this journey is that you don't need to go from 0 to 100. You got to go from 0 to 0.001. Like, you just need to make one little tiny improvement, and all of a sudden you've gotten a little bit better. And, you know, these small wins that we're talking about, making sure your coffee grinds are cleaned off your counter in the morning, right? Having your coffee ready the night before, these little wins over time, they accumulate into big wins. And then you have self-respect, and then you have confidence, and then you can show up into the world a happy person who actually gives back, who's not, you know, those people that maybe at work that they complain too much. Like, you don't want to be that person, right? And as equal as it is that whoever I respect, I should aim to be like, whoever annoys me, maybe I should not try and be like.
Yeah.
So you can use both of those as an idea. But that's good.
How has modern Stoicism differed from the traditional practices in the Greek times?
That's a great question. There is a divide in the Stoic world right now, because you have modern Stoics, Ryan Holiday, he's one of them. Donald Robertson's kind of in the middle here. What's it, Massimo Pigliucci? I can never pronounce his last name correct. But there are modern Stoics, and they try and strip away some of the spiritual aspects of Stoicism. So they try and look at it really through like a self-help lens. And that is a part of Stoicism, but it's far from the only part, right? I mean, fundamentally, it's about character, which is for the world. So right now you kind of have two camps, which is modern Stoics who take away some of those spiritual aspects, and then you have they've coined themselves traditional Stoics, right? Chris Fisher, if anyone wants to look into him, he's a big proponent of this. But he goes into a lot of the spiritual aspects of Stoicism in addition to the self-help aspects, which, again, I'm more on the traditional side of things because I don't see anything in there that seems irrational to me. Like a lot of these ideas that they talk about, us being a small part of a greater whole, that seems to be just true. It doesn't, to me, there doesn't seem to be anything crazy about that. Mm-hmm. It's like, of course, we're a part of a bigger whole. We're part of a community, a family, a country, and so on. The idea of providence, which is kind of like everything happens for a reason, might be sound a little bit spiritual, but really what that means is that if you show up in the world in a good way, if you try and do your best, fortune will be biased towards you. You'll get lucky. People say you make your own luck. That's kind of a Stoic thing. It means if you be a good person, it's not a perfect equation, but you're probably going to end up okay in the long term. Mm-hmm. And so that's really what providence is. Again, it's not necessarily anything that has to be, you know, supernatural or too spiritual. To me, it's a very rational way of thinking about life.
Stoicism has seemed to, in recent times, worked its way into a lot of sports, like a number of winning coaches and people in that world have adopted it as a, I guess, just a way to, when something bad happens, to just move on very quickly and achieve the goal that you're after. But how do you see it relating in that world?
It's great. It's a great question. You know, my good friend of mine, Quinn Everett, he's here actually. He lives locally, and he's the top Olympic weightlifter in his category, in his weight category. And he's in the heavyweight. He's in the plus category. You know, I think it's like 83 kilos plus, which means he has no limit to his weight. And he's a big strong guy. But so I interviewed him on the podcast, and he's really big into Stoicism as well. And I think this idea that there's things up to us and there's things not up to us, that applies to everything, right? So if you're in the gym, there's going to be so many things that you just can't control. You know, you might have a bad day because of I don't know, maybe your knees get achy when it rains or something like that. Maybe you had a recent death in the family and that's drained your resources, so you can't show up in the gym as you normally do. You can't control like the weather. So maybe the gym you go to, that's the only one that you can go to, doesn't have air conditioning and it's really hot in the gym. Like there's all of these external factors. And so you have to be okay with that. And how do you be okay with that? You put all of your attention on the things that are actually up to you. You do your best to make sure you get good sleep. You do your best to make sure that you eat the right foods. You show up, you try and be as present as you can each day in the gym. You listen to your coach. You do the warm-up exercises that are so boring, but you got to do so you don't get injured. Like there's this huge list of things that's actually up to you. And that's where your focus should be. It shouldn't be on, you know, whatever situation that happened yesterday. Someone said something to you that's bothering you and it's distracting you. It's like, no, that's in the past. That's not up to me. What's up to me right now is showing up in the gym, doing the best I can with what I have. And that follows through all the way to competition, where you get these top level athletes. Mm-hmm. You might show up. Okay, so athletes have to travel often to get to the competition, the top level athletes. I don't know about you guys. I feel terrible after flying. Mm-hmm. Like I there's no way I could perform as well as I could, mm-hmm. you know, if I didn't travel. Your back aches and you barely slept and, you know, you're breathing in terrible air on the airplane and. But that's not up to you. You decided to come to this competition. Most everyone else had to travel as well. That's not up to you. What can you do? Well, you can maybe take a nap and recover some of that gains. You can, maybe there's some electrolytes you can take. Like there's things that you can do to counteract that. And that's where you should focus on. And so I think like the best athletes, to your point, have completely adopted this idea in their philosophy, because there's no way you can be successful at that level in the sport and be focused on things that are not up to you, mm-hmm. because you're not putting the focus where it needs to be, which is optimizing your own performance.
I want to ask you, Mike, because I know this is something that we're always learning about, stoicism, and we subscribe to different podcasts, Brandon's being one of them, and different pieces of literature. How have you found exposing yourself to some of these ideologies has helped shape your life and your day-to-day and your mindset? Like, what's the outcome been for you?
I feel like I've always, without knowing that this existed, that I've had some of these principles in my life. Mm-hmm. And maybe that was because it was they were kind of ingrained in me from coaches and
being from Nova Scotia.
Being from Nova Scotia, but I always believed in hard work and really focusing on my goals. And one of the big things that I've learned from it is to try to move past the things that you can't control, because I'm still very guilty of it. Like, I'll sometimes wake up in the middle of the night thinking off like a high school basketball game that I lost and what I could have done differently. Like, obviously this does not matter in my life whatsoever. Yeah. But I'm like, oh, if I just freaking went right instead of left, I would have scored or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But I think just being able to move on from the things that are out of my control and get better at that, because I honestly find just doing hard things for me to be pretty easy. Like, if someone says this is good for you, like, I can go in an ice bath for X amount of time. I can do whatever it is, as long as I know it's good for me. I can do it. But that was one thing, and still very, very new to it. But just trying to get past the things I can't control and not focus on that, because sometimes I'll do something and afterwards I'm just replaying the event in my head and trying to picture how I should have done it. And that is part of stoicism, is like, well, you said, look at how you went about your day or what caused you suffering and then move on from it. But to try to not focus on these things, I think is the biggest thing that I'm trying to take away from it, and just, yeah, look at what I can control and play to my strengths. I don't know if that's a stoic philosophy, but in music, yeah, that's one thing that when I look at other musicians who are successful, a lot of them, because when you see someone on stage who never makes a mistake, like, obviously they're very well practiced and rehearsed and competent in what they do, but they also don't try to do something they can't do. Like, you play to what you're good at. Like, I know what I can do really well on stage, and so I really try to focus on that and emphasize that. And I don't have to, on my spare time, I'll try to overcome the things that I need to get better at. But I know, okay, I can sing really good and I can play half decent. I got to really focus on these parts and let that shine. I don't have to be something I'm not.
That's entirely stoic, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a live according to nature, which is the first axiom of stoicism historically. Part of what that means is living according to your personal nature. Yeah. So a good way of thinking about this is, stoicism says be useful to the world. The best chance you have of being useful to the world is by providing the world with what you're good at, using your strengths for the world. Now, there is an asterisk here, because when you're on stage, and you're, let's say you said you're a really good singer. Okay. That's entirely stoic for you to be singing, as long as you're doing it for the band, for the crowd. If you're alone in a room by yourself, not that you're practicing, but if you're just alone, just to narcissistically hear you sing your beautiful voice all alone in my room, just for me to hear, that's not stoic at all. So another thing, it's an external, it's not good or bad. Singing in and of itself is not good or bad, but singing, especially if it's your strength, with people, to give back to the community, to create this sense of belonging and spirituality that we've all experienced at music concerts, which is just beautiful. That's entirely stoic.
Nice.
You said earlier that most stoics are cheerful, but I feel like there's this assumption that stoic is associated with seriousness. Mm. Why do you think that is?
It's a good question. I mean, I think I tend to be a bit more on the serious end of things, just just anecdotally observing myself. I think, I don't know, it's because it is a serious philosophy in that it demands the best of you. Epictetus has that awesome quote, when are you going to, what is it? When are you going to start demanding the best of yourself? Right. And it is a serious philosophy in the sense that, yeah, you can't just sit down and watch Netflix all day. Like you, yeah, sure. You can do that on the weekends. I'm not saying Netflix is bad again. It's not good or bad, but ultimately like how you should be thinking about your life as a whole, how can I do things for people, for the world? How can I be a better human being for myself and for everyone around me? You know, I think that's where the focus kind of needs to be.
Mm. Because you know so much more than we do about this. Is there anything that maybe we have missed that could be important to listeners for their understanding, for getting started in this? Maybe it's looking more into this that you might suggest.
I would just say, I got to tell you this term or this phrase that Dr. Kai Whiting, he's a Stoic, contemporary Stoic and author. He's a good friend of mine now, but he asked this question, is it appropriate? So, you know, we've talked about Stoicism now for over an hour, and it is a complicated philosophy, but that phrase, if you ask yourself, is it appropriate? A lot of times that clears up a lot of the misconceptions you have about Stoicism. It really simplifies it. So, okay, let's take the example of you're at work and you have an employee working for you, someone on your team, and they're not performing well. Is it appropriate? Okay, is it appropriate to bring them in and be, you know, super nice and super forgiving all the time to them? It's like, not really, because there's an expectation for you as their manager to up their standard and make sure they're performing well. Does it mean you bring them in and you scream at them and you call them names? No, that's inappropriate as well. So what's the appropriate response here? You bring them in, you give them a proper evaluation, you tell them where they can improve. You tell them you're going to help them improve. There's a plan here for you to get better. I'm always here. The door is always open. If you want to come in, you can get better and I'm going to help you get better. If they continue to not improve, the appropriate action might be, we might have to get rid of you. We might have to fire you. And as the person getting fired, you might say, that's actually not a bad thing because I'm a Stoic and this opens the opportunity. Maybe I'm not fulfilled in that job. Maybe that work environment is not for me. Maybe I can go off for someone else. So I went out into a rabbit hole there with the example, but just that question of, is it appropriate? It adds so much context, right? Like I have, in my profession, I have individuals that I work with that I'm like higher up on the hierarchy than them, but they're old enough to be my grandfather. So that's a very interesting question, right? Like, how do you manage people that are like not three times, but, you know, considerably older than you? And again, it's that question of, is it appropriate? I'm not going to treat them the same way I would treat like a 20-year-old that just came in. It's a completely different context. Now, I still have to manage them because that's my role in this situation. But the appropriate response here, it has to take in the context of the situation. So I think just for anyone, I probably should have mentioned that earlier, but just that question, if you want to be more stoic throughout your daily life, ask yourself that question. What action is appropriate given the circumstances right now? What do you guys think of that? You guys,
I love it.
It's so accessible. It's so simple. It feels like a bit of a mantra that we can easily remember and pull out. It's really beautiful. You have such a eloquent way of communicating. Just sitting with you is like, I just love being in your presence and your energy. You're smart, but you're also a great listener and kind, and it doesn't feel like, oh, I just need to throw all this information at you. I mean, we're asking and we're in a podcast setting, which you're familiar with, but it just feels like such a beautiful way to live. It's balanced. It's for everyone. Here in Nova Scotia, we were already, 90% of the way there naturally anyways, so why not keep going? But it's just, I love this way of kind of summing things up for people who maybe just want to get started in thinking about this.
Do you have one book that people could maybe start with that you would recommend?
Yeah, I do. And again, I gotta state the disclaimer here that Dr. Kai Whiting, he's a friend of mine through the podcast, but he's a friend of mine because I've learned so much about Stoicism through him. So You know, it's he came into my friend circle after the fact, but he wrote a book. He co-authored it with another academic, Leonidas Konstantakos. Both of those guys have just an amazing understanding of Stoicism and how it applies today. The reason I recommend this book is because it's pretty short. I think it's about 120, 150 pages. It goes into some of the history of Stoicism, but really just like modernizes it. Mm-hmm. And it captures a lot of the spiritual elements that a lot of the modern Stoics don't really want to touch on. They're afraid of of bad press, right? Talking about spirituality. Mm-hmm. But anyways, the book is Being Better, Stoicism for a World Worth Living In.
Okay.
It's an easy read. There's some exercises in there. And again, I've learned so much about Stoicism through this Kai Whiting. And
where's he from?
He's from the UK.
Yeah.
Yeah, he lectures on Stoicism there. He's an academic. So what you'll find, interestingly, is that divide we talked about earlier, traditional and modern Stoics.
Mm-hmm.
The traditional Stoics tend to be the academics. So the people that are in the university historically studying the philosophy. And the modern Stoics tend to, you know, be interested in Stoicism, but they're not academically in that academic system, I guess I want to say. And I don't mean to say that in like a, I'm not trying to insinuate anything, but that is kind of how the divide tends to be. The people that have studied the history of it, they tend to know not our opinions on it, but what the Stoics actually thought in that time, which it's important to recognize, I think.
Well, let's wrap up just by giving us a few words about your own podcast, The Strong Stoic.
Sure.
How often does it come out? What kind of guests might our listeners expect, and where can we find you?
Yeah, so The Strong Stoic podcast. Right now I'm doing weekly episodes, some solo episodes where I delve deep into a particular topic, which is completely at random. It's the topics that the cosmos gives me in my brain. And I interview all kinds of people. I mean, Stoic authors. Kai Whiting's been on there a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
You've been on there, a lovely guest as well. I interview pretty much anyone that seems to have some kind of Stoic inkling, a lot of people do that have kind of been through things and have been successful. I think it's a natural philosophy. So. Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, we'll link all this in the show notes, of course.
Yeah, thanks so much for being here. This was a pleasure to get to pick your brain. We didn't get into anything about your own personal life, which is a thing we typically try to do, but you're just such a wealth of knowledge. We had to tap into it here.
My life's boring anyway. But no, I appreciate it. It was just so much fun. And again, obviously, I really, really enjoy spending time with Kristen here. And it was great to meet you.
Yeah,
it's the first time
sure.
I met you today. And I had good expectations and they were met. So I think
perfect.
That's very good.
It's very kind. Yeah. Well, thanks again. And we can't wait to share this episode with everyone.
Cheers, everyone.
Cheers. There we go, friends. Another great episode with Brandon Tumblin. Thanks for being on, Mike and Kristen. And thanks for tuning in again.
Do you feel like you're a Stoic philosopher after this episode?
I felt like I was on my way there, but even before this episode.
Yeah
it's some. I don't know that I identify as a Stoic, but certainly more than any other label, I guess.
Ism.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's I really like this ideology and just the way you can approach things in your life. It just kind of makes things feel a little easier, I guess. And
yeah, that's right.
You don't have to stress about things when you're looking at it with this angle. And it obviously takes practice. And I think if it's something you want to do, you really gotta stick to it, like anything in
life.
Like
anything meaningful, yeah. It takes a bit of commitment.
Put in the time and the reminders and consistency, and you come out as a better human.
Well, and speaking of putting in the time, I know you are releasing a new song in just a couple of days from the Town Heroes.
This
you
want
to talk about that?
Olden Days. This will be the third song released from our upcoming album.
Cool.
There's a fun, upbeat jam, as they say, and it's called Olden Days, and it's kind of about thinking off the past, thinking off just fun times, kind of as a kid or whatever, and just kind of sinking into that moment and letting it overcome you, I guess.
It's another incredible song. I've heard it. I can give my review now. And so, yeah, that'll be out Friday and all the places that music is streamed and I'm sure published on your social channels.
Yes.
So folks can tune into the Town Heroes and discover that new tune.
Yeah, yeah. And you have Togetherlands opening up soon, releasing the calendar.
Yeah, May 11th, the gallery is opening for year two. I'll be publishing my events calendar in just a couple of weeks on my brand new website. So you can see what we're focusing on this year, more events this year. Yeah. And lots of great talent, diversity. Yeah, I'm excited.
I'll be doing... maybe I shouldn't give it away here.
We'll wait. We'll wait. More to come on that. Yeah. Have a little intrigue.
And check out Brandon's own podcast there, The Strong Stoic. And yeah, shoot us any questions you might have or guests you want to see us have on the show. We love your feedback. And yeah, rate, review, subscribe, all those things. They all help. And tell a friend. That's completely free, you know. Tell a bud about the show if you like it. And you know, we want to just keep getting word out.
Word of mouth never goes out of style.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for being here. We'll see you next Wednesday.
Woo!